case you're wondering what you walked into the middle of, you kind of walked into the end of it. We started this series 5 weeks ago. And the series is all about one thing that we're all familiar with, fear. Everybody seems to be struggling these days with fear. And so we've kind of used this movie, The Rise of the Guardians, as a backdrop for dealing with fear. Not just any fear. We've dealt with the fear that comes from the things around us, and we've not been using the mythical characters so much as we've been looking at some of the concepts. The fact that God gave us wonder, hope, memories, vision, and we'll get to Jack Frost in a moment. Who is the guy you're looking at on the street, on the screen? Well, in the movie, his name is Jackson Overland Frost. I love the fact they gave these guys full names. You know, you realize when you hear the middle name, you're in a lot of trouble, right? Jackson Overland Frost, but we better know him as Jack Frost. He's the guy that nips your nose and whatever he does in that song, and he's the guy that we usually associate with winter. And at the start of the movie, if you go back and all the things that we've talked about, remember, nobody believes in him, including the other guardians. All the other characters that we looked at, none of them actually believed that Jack Frost was a guardian. He's not even sure what he's there to guard. Remember the clip that we watched where he was asked, what is this center? He said, I don't have a clue. I'm here, but I don't know why I'm here. I lack purpose in what I'm doing. He lacked his memories, those things that the Tooth Fairy was supposed to be protecting and calling back to the moment we just saw. We'll talk about that in a moment. Remember when he had the problem at Easter, and it was actually the bunny that told him, we should have never even let you on this team. I don't trust you. But here's what you need to know about Jack Frost. When he starts this thing, he's not in it for what he's supposed to be in it for. You see, he's in it for what's good for himself. And he's in it for what's good for Jack. And throughout the movie, if you've seen the whole movie or you just watch some of the clips that we've given you, throughout the movie, he has made some very selfish and some very questionable decisions. But Jack's presence as a guardian is not a mistake. They needed him in the movie to fight fear. Once again, our friend Pitch, the guy that they put out there kind of showing fear, has done a magnificent job. He's left Jack literally in a very cold place. We've watched one by one over the past few weeks as the guardians have been beaten out in the lights that are supposed to be the lights of the world. One by one, they've gone out. And just before that clip started, Fear, Pitch, and Jack had an epic battle. And during the battle, Pitch had the last little fairy of memory, and he looked at him and said, he looked at Jack and said, trade me. I'll let her go if you give me your staff, which Pitch assumed was the source of Jack's power. Just like Jack did with his sister. Did you notice what he did? He traded places with her. He sacrificed his life to save hers. So he makes the decision yet again, and he hands Pitch the staff, and Pitch sort of releases and keeps his part of the deal. And Pitch breaks the staff, and he thinks fear is won. I blinded wonder. I fractured hope. The memories are all captured. The dreams have been killed off and replaced by nightmare. And now this last would-be guardian, he's done for. But here's where Pitch made a mistake. Here's where fear loses. He should have let Jack keep the staff, and what he should have done is he should have taken those memories with him. Because he left that last little tube of memories, that last little one that he did not get. Here he has them, and unfortunately for Pitch, he made another mistake. He left the last little fairy of memories, and she opened them up, and Jack discovers how he became Jack Frost. He did so again by sacrificing himself to save his sister. And once Jack understands who he is, The picture that I showed you before, he mends his staff. He begins to put that staff back together, and he's off to join the fight to stop fear. The difference is now he knows he's a guardian, and he's in this for the kids. And he soon discovers that he is actually there to guard something. He's there to guard fun. Now, I want to tell you something. You've already taken part in an object lesson this morning. Go ahead, if you dare, grab that red book in the pew rack in front of you. That's called a hymnal. I know we don't use them as much as we used to. And if you turn to page 411, you will see that the song that we sang this morning is called The Joy of the Lord. But when you look at that version of the Joy of the Lord, you know what you'll see? Three verses. They cut out the fourth verse. When they put our hymnal together, for some reason, they cut out that verse that, did you see, he fills my heart with laughter. Ha, 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 ha. And I wish I could have saw y'all's faces when y'all were singing that. You couldn't help it. A little smile came up on your face because there's just something about this idea of fun. And a lot of times we don't think about it when it comes to our church or about our faith, but it is a valuable thing that God gave us is fun. So here's the definitions. Fun is an outward influence that provides amusement or enjoyment. Fun is an inward feeling, a mood for finding or making amusement. Fun is a method of communication to indulge in banter or play. Fun is something we can participate in, providing entertainment, amusement, or enjoyment. And now I put this question out earlier this week in the email, if you subscribe to that and you got it, here's the good question. Is faith supposed to be fun? That's a good question. I mean, is faith supposed to be fun? And as I look at those definitions of faith, it says that as I look at those definitions of fun, it says that it's amusement, and when you look up the word amusement, amusement means to hold the attention of someone pleasantly. Well, isn't that sort of what we try to do here on Sunday morning? Y'all come here, or people come, and when we go out in the world, we're trying to get their attention, and we're trying to hold their attention. Fun was defined as entertainment. Did you know entertainment is something diverting or engaging? Isn't that what I'm trying to do with faith? I'm trying to divert you from the life that you're normally living and engage you in a relationship with God. How about the word enjoyment? To take pleasure in or satisfaction in. Tell you what, we'll get to those words in just a few minutes. But I think that's a big part of faith. So with that understanding, I absolutely, positively believe that this life of faith is supposed to have an aspect of fun to it. And I do understand that a lot of people have problems with that, and we'll talk about that. But I believe that God intended for our faith to have an element of fun. And when we take that fun out, well, we have to deal with fear. So today we are going to talk about conquering fear by developing a fun faith. And I know everybody that knows me, and there's a blow-up skeleton sitting in the pews left over from last week, and you know me and you're thinking, oh my gosh, please tell me this isn't going to be one. It's not a totally weird sermon. I don't think so. No, we've done weirder, okay? I'm not making anything. I'm not cooking. I didn't bring a chef's hat with me, and no costumes. It's just me and what you see on the screen this morning. But I want you to see exactly what a fun faith looks at, because I'm not talking about we put up amusement park attractions, although that'd be kind of cool. And I'm not really talking about a style of music, and I'm not talking about the fact that we should maybe be more of a restaurant. I'm not talking about any of those things. When I talk about fun faith, I'm not talking about just purely bringing somebody in and just amusing them or just trying to entertain them. I think the problem with fun faith is we don't realize what fun faith is. So let me educate you what fun faith really is. And after you figure out what it is, I'm going to show you how you use it to conquer fear. Sounds like a good plan for a sermon, doesn't it? So, first aspect that you need to know about fun faith is adaptable. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. So to win those under the law, to those not having the law, there we go, I became like one not having the law. Now there's an interesting idea. Though I am not free from God's law, but I am under Christ's law. So as to win those having the law, not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessing. Now, if you've been with us any length of time, you know this is one of my favorite verses. I love this verse. I could like write this thing on the wall, and just to remind us the fact of what Paul is saying here, because I didn't write this. This was written 2,000 years ago before anybody ever thought about Barry being in the world. This is what Paul said. He said, you know what? Those words in the red. I have become all things to all people so that I might, so that by all possible means. And I know that's a struggle. I say those words, that's a struggle for me too. You see, a lot of times when we start thinking about words like that, the problem is it kicks right against what we think about church. I grew up in church. I know what church is. Rows and columns. You come in, you sit, you put your hands in your lap. It's very reverent. It's very dignified. It's very traditional. Of course, I also grew up in a weird church. Okay, on so many levels. Sometimes I like to put you guys in a time machine and take you back to where I came from. You'd be like, ah, now I understand where he came from. I get why he does things the way he does it. And the problem is that when you look at that, this all possible means is kind of like carte blanche. And so we find people that are always trying to be cutting edge and they're trying to be a rebel mentality. And so this idea of by all possible means, we get these two alternate ideas. And I'd like to let you know, both of them are wrong. You see, under both circumstances, whether I am trying to force the church into be very traditional or I'm trying to force the church to be a little more loose in the way that it's doing things, you understand what I'm really trying to do, right? I'm trying to force the church to be like I want it to be. And that's not what Paul's message is. You can only use this verse if you put the verse back where it came from. Paul's quote had nothing to do with what was good for Paul. Paul wants to do good for something else. See, Paul's point is that fun faith and the adaptable faith is adaptable to every culture. If your faith needs the right environment to survive, folks, you've got problems. If the only way you can do it is with the right music or the right methodology, whether it's traditional, contemporary, if it has to be a certain way, then you understand that kind of faith isn't very useful for God. Nolan Ryan was one of the greatest pitchers to ever pitch. However, he struggled in the first part of his career because you know what he could do? Throw fastballs. You know when Nolan Ryan became dangerous? When he finally learned how to throw a changeup. Because now you had to worry about the 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and by the time you're ready to wait for that thing, he'd throw you like a 60-mile-an-hour changeup, and you swung three times before the ball ever gets there because you're cocked and ready for that fastball. You understand. There has to be this adaptability based on who's standing at the plate. It's adaptable across social structures. Funny thing we see out in the world, the less God there is, the more fractured our society gets. Isn't that true? The less we see God, the more we fight with each other. And that's because our faith should be the one uniting thing, a common bond that doesn't matter what your skin color is. Doesn't matter what your ethnic background is. It's not a gender conversation. It has absolutely positively no bearing about how you got here. God is never concerned with how you got here. He's more concerned with the fact that, guess what? You're here. Your path to get here is not as important to God as you're here. Our adaptability, it needs to go across age ranges. You know how I know I'm getting old? I know I'm getting old. Because my kids play games that I don't understand. Okay, they do things I'm like, huh? I don't get it. They're into a new game, and we'll talk about this in the next few weeks. I look at that game, gives me a headache. My kids now do things that I call weird. And trust me, when I call you weird, you're weird. Because I'm about as weird as we already get. And so when I think it's weird, it's got to be weird. But you do understand my kids are important because my job is to adapt my faith disposition so that they can understand it. I'm supposed to be a bridge, not a dam. I'm supposed to be making my faith accessible to them where they can come across and see it rather than trying to build some pent-up thing to keep the river safe. It's adaptable, folks. It's adaptable across tax brackets. I love the fact that when Jesus began preaching, where did he start? Poor people. He started with people that had nothing. And funny is, that's the people that usually are able to understand who God is because they have nothing, so they're like, sure, I'll take whatever you got. There is no taxable structure. You don't have to be financially valuable in order to be valued by God. Paul goes so far as to say that he actually allows the way that he demonstrates his faith to be guided by the audience he's preaching to. Danger, Will Robinson. Those are fighting words in a lot of churches. That's the concept of bringing in worldly. No. Paul is able to do this because of the core value that's at the center of what Paul is preaching. And that is, he understands his purpose. It was right there. Did you see it? Amongst all the things, I became Jew to Jew. I became weak to weak. I began to do all this. What was Paul after? It was simple. Save some. Share the gospel. That's important for us to remember. Save some. And share the gospel. What this means is that method-wise, I will use just about anything at my disposal if I can actually reach the lost with it. Paul says, I'll even go to the tomb of the unknown God and I'll preach there. And I'll use the unknown God as my object lesson. Message-wise, doesn't change. Sin is still sin. Consequences of sin are still consequences of sin. I don't get to rewrite the rules. Jesus is still Jesus. I don't get to pick a different person just because that one doesn't suit me. And the only way to receive forgiveness of sins and not receive the consequence of sin is to place your faith in him. Unchangeable. Ice cream ingredients here, folks. That's the message. Now, the wrapper I put around it, the way that I share it, well, for it to be out there for our culture to understand, we have to be willing to do a little adapting to our faith. So not only is fun faith supposed to be adaptable, fun faith is supposed to be engaging faith. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. There are some synonyms I'd like you to consider for this word engaging. Here they are. To engage means to occupy, to attract, to involve, to participate, to become involved in. Now, tell me, is this not what we're trying to get the world to do when it comes to a relationship with Christ? Are we really just trying to get them to come here on Sunday morning and give us about an hour and a half of their time, hour and 15 minutes of time, depending on how long winded the preacher wants to give? Are we really just trying to get them to come here and sit and then go and then hope they come back the next week? Or are we trying to get them to occupy some of their time with this relationship? Are we trying to attract others to this relationship? Are we trying to actually get them involved in the relationship? Do we want them to participate in the relationship? Do we want them to become more involved? That's the goal, right? And for that, our faith has to be engaging. And I think Jesus gave us a great model. See, crowds just gathered everywhere he went. Jesus didn't have a social media page. He didn't have Facebook. Or Twitter, or Instagram, or Snapchat, I can say that if I say it really, really slow. Snapchat, see, this is how you know I'm old. I have to talk slow when I'm talking about some of these things. He didn't have any of those things to gather a crowd. Jesus just showed up, and guess what? Everybody's like, we heard Jesus is in town. Let's go see him. He's like the place everybody wants to be, and everywhere he went, crowds began to gather. Not only did the crowds begin to gather, they brought their sick and their broken. They brought all their problems with them. Isn't that amazing? Come on, we're here to do something. Like, leave the broken and sick home and just bring me your happy faces, right? No. They brought everything that was broken and all the diseases and everything was wrong and those things that honestly, if they walked into our church, we'd be like, can we take your temperature, please? We're not sure we want you in the building at this point. No. Jesus said, bring it all. Bring me everything. And that's what they did. And it says, and they saw and heard from him, and they just could not look away from him. Man, when they saw Jesus and he was all done, they're like, man, when's the next show? I know I've been sitting here for an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours. But you know what? If you're going to do it again, Jesus, I'll say, you're going to preach the same. That's okay. I'll still listen to the same message. I'm good. I'm not going anywhere. Isn't that amazing? I mean, they sat there in the heat. No comfy pews, no air conditioning, no snack. A lot of times they would sit there all day long. And I'm wondering, what was he doing right? He engaged them. They were captivated by what he did. When Jesus started his lessons, I mean, I'm sure the Pharisees laughed at him. What is this crazy guy doing? He's talking about dirt and seeds and nets and fish and people being thrown in jail, and he's telling stories, and how can you ever make sense out of any of that? Come on, Jesus, just get up there and read the scroll like everybody else. Jesus said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it because I want to engage people in faith, because the moment you become engaged, it's fun. You're vested in it. You want to keep going with that idea of fun. See, he met people where they were in life, and he started at that point. Didn't matter where they were. I don't care what your problem is. I don't care what sin you're working with. I don't care. I don't care that that's your starting point. I will meet you right there. Ooh, that's scary, isn't it? Barry, do you know what kind of things are going on in the world? I know what's going on in the world. Trust me, we'll talk about that in October. I know exactly what's going on in the world, and the church should be right in the middle of it, folks. He drew them in by making the faith not the, making their faith not some out there religion. He didn't come in there and say, look, I am the new sheriff in town and I'm going to lay down the law. This is the way it's going to be. What did he do? He came in and he ate dinner with them. He sat around and chatted with them. Now, he talked about their sin openly and honestly. But he was able to do it because he came with the attitude that I'm here to help. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help. He tied it back to their everyday life. You know, I'm quite sure there were quite a few people that went and listened to a sermon for Jesus, and they came home, and the next week they were out, and they were plowing their ground, and they were getting their seeds out. And when they got, you know, this is kind of like that thing Jesus was talking about last week. You know, as you sow the seeds, some lands over there, and some lands over there. Yeah, I remember the lesson. And all of a sudden, you have this magical tie-in that every single day they go out and plant crops, they have this picture. That's fun faith, folks. It ties in with my life. See, here's the fact. They already had plenty of religious rules. The Jews, plenty of religious rules. What caught their attention was his relevance to their life. They didn't need any more rules. They had 400 books of rules about what they weren't allowed to do. Volumes written just on what you weren't allowed to do on the Sabbath. The last thing anybody needed was another set of rules. They had plenty. What they needed was some relevant advice on how to live their life, something that made sense to them, something they could engage in. Fun faith is supposed to be pleasant. Here we go. Psalm 133. How good and pleasant is it when God's people live together in unity? I'm not sure I know. I haven't seen it yet. It is like a precious oil poured on the head, running down the beard, running down Aaron's beard, down the collar of his robe, as if the dew of the Hermon were falling on Mount Zion. For there the Lord bestows his blessing forevermore. Just so you know, I'll take away all the poetry from around that. This idea of it's supposed to be pleasant is all about presentation. Presentation? Hold with me for a second. Think about this. Suppose on my tab, on my dime, I take you out to the world's best restaurant. And man, we go to the restaurant, and I tell you, there's no limit. Order anything you want off the menu, and they bring you, man, all of these succulent, juicy, wonderful dinner meals, and they bring you the meat and the salad and all these pieces and parts, and you've got this wonderful meal laid out there before you, no cost to you. And as you're eating, there's a little hair in some of your food. How much hair is too much hair in your food before you decide not to eat it? One strand, probably. What if, as you're beginning your meal, this wonderful, succulent meal, you look out and there's like little black things floating in your water? Ooh. What if, as you're getting ready to take that first bite of your meal, and you pick up your silverware and, oh, there's leftovers because the fork is still dirty? What about as you are eating your meal, a little critter runs across the floor? Now, depending on the critter, either you're just disgusted or you're standing on the table. Okay, it kind of depends on what ran. What if your wonderful meal, all those other things were right, but the person that was waiting on you was rude, lousy, or unattending? Was the food really that good? You'll never know. You know why? You were too busy, lost in the fact that it wasn't presented in the way that you understood it. Honestly, you may be the absolutely best Christian to ever walk the planet, but if nobody can stand to be around you, what good are you? If you can't talk to people, if you can't share your faith in a way that they can understand it, what good are you? Let me make sure I drive the point home. The gospel is the greatest message in all of human history. There is no better story than the gospel. But like any message, good or bad, it can only be heard if people want to listen to you. And if nobody is listening, what good is it? It's the old thing, if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one around to hear it, does it really make a sound? Some people will say yes, some people will never know, because there was nobody there to witness it, was it? You see, the ability to listen depends greatly on how the person that is delivering the message is perceived. If they look at you and they see you as just there to judge them, as just there to tell them all the things that are wrong with their life, and all you're going to tell them is they're going to hell, you haven't done anything for them, folks. If they look at you and all they can see is the fact that maybe you could win first place in a bulldog contest because there's a big frown on your face all the time, you've done nothing for them. Man, Jesus came and gave his life for you. Doesn't that make you somewhat happy? Doesn't it somewhat put a smile on your face? Can't you at least smile when you talk about that? You understand, presentation is a big part of fun faith. And maybe the fact that we haven't presented it so well, Jesus gave us a great story. But you know what? We can't present it. We just can't. At least not without telling people things that just make them go away. Jesus never was into crowds. This is not about me. We need to make things work so we have more people in the... It's not about a crowd, folks. It doesn't really matter to me how many people are sitting in the pew. My question is, how many people did we reach for Christ? And the only way we can have that is if we have a little fun in our faith, because guess what? Fun faith brings pleasure. Did you know that? Take delight in the Lord. He will give you the desires of your heart. Now, I by no means am a health and wealth preacher. Not every day of your faith is going to be rainbows and sunshine. As a matter of fact, there are going to be some days in your faith. I had one of these weeks. For some reason, somebody decided to put six of these days together where it just, I was tired of faith by the end of the week. I wanted to go home and sit and do nothing. And just tell people, leave me alone. I've had enough of faith this week. Seriously. So I'm not saying it's always going to be happy, but what I am telling you is that, well, take delight means that if you get no pleasure from your faith, then you have a problem. There should be some kind of enjoyment. That was the whole reason we put that psalm back at the end, that verse that we left out of the... He fills my heart with laughter. Ha, 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 ha. I should have some fun with this, right? I mean, Jesus never expected me to be just like miserable. But that's what we think we're supposed to be. We think that faith just gets mundane. Well, it does. But it shouldn't be a judgery. Yeah, believe it or not, and I'm the pastor of this church, there are Sundays I don't want to be here. There are. Especially those Sundays where it's nice and bright and shiny and like getting close to up in the 70s, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, and my bike is sitting there in the garage. It's like, come and ride me. We could go on a long trip and you can just take the day off. You can go worship out there. There are days that it is a mundane thing, but you know what? I've never left here that I wasn't glad I came, because it's not a drudgery. Once I get in the presence of God, I'm like, this way outweighs the bike ride, folks. I'm here because you know what? I have fun doing this. I have fun living my relationship for Christ. We like this word. There should be some joy in what we do. And note what happens. When joy happens, people begin to get excited. And when people begin to get excited, then you know what? More people want to come and see what you're excited about. And you know what the other thing that happens as you're beginning to get more joyous about things? What happens to fear in the middle of joy? What happens? It goes away. It disappears. It loses its power. Maybe it's still there, and maybe you're like, okay, eventually this is going to end, and I got to go back and face the real world. But it adds joy to our life, and it gives us something that we can use to say, you know what? It's been a terrible week, but Sunday's coming. And I'm going to get in the presence of the Lord, and I am going to celebrate the fact that I survived this week. And I'm going to have some joy in the fact that, you know what? God, we're going to load it up and try it again next week. And you know what? That week may not go so well either. But you know what? Sundays are coming. And I'm going to get in the presence of the Lord, and I am going to be joyous in what I'm doing. And then finally, and this is an important fact that we need to remember, fun faith is satisfying. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God said, never will I leave you and never will I forsake you. Now this is important for us to remember, because folks, when the fun fades from faith, that's hard to say, fun fades from faith, that's a tongue twister. You know what happens? We go looking for more. Have you ever been to one of those fancy schmancy restaurants and they bring you the great big plate and like the serving portion is like this big? I mean, it looks really good, but I'm a grown man. I don't want that much food on my plate. So you sit there and you pay the bill, and after you're done paying the bill, you have a fit because you realize how much that little bitty meal happens, and then when you leave and you're on the way home, you swing through the McDonald's drive-thru. Because you know what? People are like, yeah. All the guys in the room are going, been there, done that. You get what happened, right? The meal was there and it was presented, but it didn't satisfy me. Maybe it was cool and it was cute, and maybe even it tasted good, what I tasted of that little bitty bit. But I'm supposed to have satisfaction from my faith. It's supposed to fill me up. It's supposed to do something for my life. You see, we leave church and, well, it was good. It wasn't bad. But I need something else. So then I go looking for more. And interesting enough, usually when we have those feelings of emptiness, we blame the preacher, the teacher. It's the worship leader's fault. They should have planned better songs. Take your pick. But you know what? The reality is a fear-filled faith will never be fully fulfilling faith. If I come into church and I think it's got to be rows and columns and it's got to be a certain way and we've got to do it the same way that we've always done it, then you understand what I'm really afraid of, right? I'm afraid that if I don't do it the way that I've always done it, that it really wasn't worship, and I don't get a check mark in my little book, and God's going to say I really didn't worship this week. That's a lot of times what we do. We become afraid that if we didn't do it the way that we thought it was supposed to be done, we become afraid that maybe I didn't do it good enough. You know, the other thing that I've noticed when it comes to faith and fun, when there is fun, what we are doing never has to be perfect. I don't have to be able to pronounce every name in the Bible correctly, and you guys have listened to me do this for years. I don't. Not every chord on the piano has to be perfect. Leah, you don't have to hit every single note wonderfully. You know what? Nothing has to be perfect if we're engaged and if we're finding joy in what we're doing and we realize what we're doing is trying to reach others for Christ. I don't need perfect. Good thing, because I've been here 10 years. I don't think we've got a perfect worship service yet. Something always seems to go wrong. I watch the tape every week when I leave. And I'm like, I can't believe we did that. Whoops. Okay? Nothing has to be perfect, though. You know why? Because we're being done, this is all being done by imperfect people, and we are just doing the best we can to get ourselves in God's presence. And sometimes we just have to remember, God laughs at it, not as he's like, oh, look at you, you made a mistake. He's kind of like, thanks, kids, for showing up. It's like when you go to a kids' performance like we're going to have next week. By the way, if you're not into fun faith, next week is going to be a bad week for you. Okay, because we're going to have a lot of fun. Okay, but kids do performances. Do you go home and say, you missed the line? That song wasn't quite good enough. No, why? Because you understand exactly what they were doing. They were doing what they were doing because you, the parent, was sitting there. They weren't trying to necessarily entertain you. They were trying to be part of your life. And that's how we need to approach this idea of faith with God. See, when it becomes a ritualistic packaged process, then we begin to focus more on what we lack and not what God has done. What's missing? What didn't we do right? What can I do better? How can I change to make it more? I got to make it. It isn't about what you lack. Okay, you're trying to make a ritual out of it. God says, hey, just relax. Come into my presence just like a child. We'll talk about that next week. But where I want to leave you is with a cool story. Putting fun back in your faith. So when I was a teenager, I worked with a puppet team. That's where all of this came from because it kind of just grew up with me. And it was a moderately conservative, okay, it was a legalistic church. We had lots of rules, lots of rows and columns. And we were asked to come and do a puppet performance for Rainbow Church of God. It was a charismatic church. And the puppet director said yes before he asked the pastor, was it a good idea? So he wrote them and said, let's go do it. He asked nobody's permission. He just said, we're going to go do this. Well, the pastor found out about it. True story. So before we were allowed to go to Rainbow Church of God and do our puppet skit, the pastor called the puppet team together, and he told us all of the things that we were going to see that really wasn't church. He told us that they were going to speak in tongues, and they were going to dance in the aisles, and they were going to maybe clap, and they were going to have all these. And you understand, that's the way they do church. That's not church. To be very honest, by the time he was done, I was expecting I was going to show up at that building. There was going to be people with two heads attached to them because he made them sound like monsters. You know what I found at Rainbow Church of God? Some people that really knew how to appreciate having fun with God. Man, they came in and then the puppets sang. A lot of times they sang with them. And when we were done, they clapped. Don't do that. Not in church. They understood the fact that they were there to worship God, and worshiping God was supposed to be fun. Now, I don't know that I agree doctrinally with everything that they believe, but I can appreciate the fact they put fun into their faith. And that was a church that was reaching people because they couldn't look away. Because they were being willing to do whatever it takes to reach people. And I appreciated that. So as a church, we need to understand the fact that everything isn't always going to be perfect. Sometimes we just do some things because guess what? It's fun. It's there for us to enjoy. Because isn't that what God is there for? God said he is there for us to enjoy this relationship with him. And I know that's hard. I'm going to ask Lynn to make her, I would say, worship team.